glad to speak. I promise I'll give you one of these little fruited nut bars, okay, for everybody that speaks tonight. So they're actually in the back, and they're little peanut bars and whatnot. We want to make them worth your while. So I only have one speaker that has signed a form. So are there any else that would like to speak? Oh, don't be shy. Okay, have one more. So why don't we start then? Michael Cronin, if you would.
Does it work? Can you hear me? My comments are more questions than anything. The presentation was fantastic. I really appreciate all the hard work you guys have gone to. The community of interest, I have questions on, and I know the commissioners want all the information they can get to make their, conduct their discussions to make their final decisions. But the community of interest bothers me a little bit. I understand you're supposed to consider a lot of elements in making your decisions, such as ethnicity, culture, economics, and people are going to bring input to you. How do you verify that? If they say, I live in low-income housing and all my neighbors do too, and we attend a certain church that we meet at all the time. You just take their word for it, or are you going to go out and talk to other people? Which is okay. And I have a question probably for the city attorney. Why can't you consider voter registration? I'm sure the registrar of the county would cooperate, but it doesn't do any good to have 60,000 people in an area and half of them aren't able to vote because of various reasons. They're not old enough, immigration status, past criminal activity, and it doesn't do any good to have representation if they can't vote for the representative that is going to represent that district. So,
is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are actually very good questions that we asked, so I'll just kind of discuss it for a little bit.
So I'll just discuss them a little bit, is that by law, we're required to rely on the census data, the decennial census data that's compiled, and that in and of itself has multiple layers of information relative to socioeconomic factors, language that's spoken at the home, how many people are in the household, and so on and so on. So there's a multitude of variables that are involved in the decennial census. Now, with regard to your other question, hey, it doesn't do any good to create a community of interest if most of those people can't vote, and that's absolutely dead on. However, one of the things that we're going to be looking at in conjunction with the total population elements, based on race, ethnicity, and so on, is the voting age population. That's one of the variables that we're going to be looking at to not only look at creating districts, but creating viable districts that can elect somebody from their community. And so because that's what's happened before. I actually have experience in this. I did this in Long Beach in the 1990s. I was part of a coalition that created the first quote-unquote Latino district. We had never had a Latino elected to city council, and from that district, we now have the first Latino mayor in Long Beach. And I also was on another commission for the Community College Board of Trustees. And so I followed this, you know, throughout my most of my adult life. And booby trap, if you will, that I found in various campaigns is people creating districts that they thought was going to enable them to create somebody from their community, and it didn't. Because of what you just said, and that is the lack of registration of people, you know, voter-registered members of the community. We cannot, by law, though, rely on that data as far as creating districts. We can only rely on the decennial census data, but there also is another layer that we can look at, and forgive me, Karen, it's called the... The American Community Survey. That's another kind of layer of demographic data that we can look at. It's not broken down by census tracts or census groups, but it does give a bit of a good cross-reference. And from that ACS, that's where we get the voting age population. So that's kind of what we're you know, some of the constraints that we have. Okay? And then our city attorney wants to say something.
Yeah, thank you very much, Commissioner. The main purpose of these meetings is to get input from all of you on different things that you think are relevant. And so, sir, that the good comments and questions. The building blocks of this that are the most legally defensing building blocks are the information that we get from the community that help us define, you know, what the communities of interest are. And we may not be able to draw map lines based on everything, you know, that you tell us. And so some of the comments that the commissioner made about there are things that we can look at and think about. We can't necessarily draw the lines based on that. But the more information that we have, the better. And the more information that you think is relevant, you know, to give to us, you know, the better. In terms of verification, Karna, I might ask you maybe to comment on that, because I think you even wrote an article on some of the theories of statistical analysis versus things that people come and potential bias, you know, in people that come to the meetings that may skew, you know, results. So you and your expertise maybe be able to add some thoughts to that. But it really, what your point for me highlights more than anything else is that it's crucial for people to turn out. The more people, the better. And this group will then, once the consultant synthesizes that information and presents it, will be able to weight the testimony that's presented in order to determine the validity of it. So they can, if something that's presented to them doesn't ring true or there's other competing information that suggests it's not true, dismiss that as not being, you know, the best thing for them to consider and factor into their ultimate line drawing. But the more we hear from you, the better, and we will all kind of collectively, me with legal advice and these guys substantively, sift through from that and get the best, most valid, complete set of information we can in order to as a basis for drawing of the maps. Karn, did you want to add anything on verification or on any other subject?
So those were good questions, clearly, and I think we could hold a whole meeting on those because those are good things to talk about. So again, in terms of verification, I think that's why we're here in public, and that's why it's a very transparent process, because everybody can listen to what everybody says. And everybody can watch what the commissioners are doing. So if somebody comes in and says, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening in this particular area, and people live in that area and they hear that, they can come in and say, well, actually, that's not true. You know, or my experience is different. Or they come in and they say, that's exactly true. And we totally agree with that. So on some level, these commissioners may, at some point, have a pretty difficult time figuring out, you know, what's the most applicable and where should those lines go based on sometimes competing testimony. And you can also get competing testimony in the same area about different topics. Like, for example, you have one community of interest that's in the same area where people are working on something, and then a different community of interest that overlaps where people are working on something else. There may not be overlap in terms of the topics, but there may be overlap in terms of the geography. So it's not all that easy. But again, just like the city attorney just said, the more information we can get, the more people we can get out, the more people we can get to participate, and the more eyes on the process, the better this process is going to be. And that's exactly why these commissioners have gone through great lengths to get an outreach consultant to, you know, go through this whole website thing, do all of these hearings, because this is a lot of hearings for a relatively small town. So they just want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to participate. So please just send people out. In terms of voter registration, so just to be sure, while we have to draw, just like the chair said, with total population from the 2010 census, they can look at turnout. So turnout is one of the variables that they can look at. They should just not be looking at Democrats versus Republicans versus declined to state voters or whatever. So do we have the turnout population, the turnout for the registered voters? Yes. Are we going to know who is a citizen of voting age? Yes, we know that too, because that comes from, as the chair says, the American Community Survey. But really what we end up drawing with, when you're looking at whether you have equal population, you go back to the census data that was collected in 2010, and that is what you have to use as the measure. That doesn't mean you can't use the other variables. So they have access to that, and again, as the city attorney said, at this point, what we're really hoping you can contribute to the process, aside from, you know, your expertise about the city in general and how it should be working, is really where your communities of interest are.
All right, we have one more speaker, thankfully. Leslie Martin.
Hi, my name is Leslie, and I just moved here in August, and I love this city so much. And there's Chula Vista, the city I love. I do love this city. And I just wanted to say thank you all for coming out and getting involved and, like, draw maps. Give them to these ladies over here. They're going to help us. You're all helping us. Thank you so much. And, yeah, just I wanted to tell you about a community. I have a little community of interest. It's really small. It's just my little, it's called the Glover Mankato Beautification Project, and we get together the first Wednesday of every month. And we pick up the litter in our neighborhood and meet each other. And it's really small, but it's important too. So even how little your community of interest is, let them know, because you don't want it broken up. So thank you. I gave her a map. Oh, it's right. Glover. So to the left. It's right here. So H, 3rd, I, and this is 4th Avenue. So it's just right here. And right there is the courthouse.
Can I get you to come down to my neighborhood? I just live a few blocks.
Yeah, I can tell you how to, I can help. You started in your own community.
Well, I'm serious. I just actually live a couple blocks up from the road.
Yeah.
Okay, well, for those who attended tonight, and I one thing I want to let you know is we got another speaker, okay? Well, yeah.
Sorry.
There we go.
Hi, my name is Leticia Cáceres, and I just wanted to mention, I'm born and raised in Chula Vista, and I left for a while, and I just recently bought a house here, so I'm back, and I'm very happy, very interested in this process. But I want to speak on behalf of patients that we serve with my organization and the low literacy aspect. And if we want people to be involved and participate, we really need to make sure that we are providing materials in a way that is addressing their literacy levels as well. So language is one aspect, literacy is a completely different one. And I can tell you I'm the outreach director, so I know, I also do marketing for our low education, low literacy level folks, and so I can tell you what type of requirements that we meet in terms of the fourth to sixth grade level, simple, bulleted. I mean, there's lots of different things that we could do to create documents that are just more appropriate and to help them get involved. I mean, even simple things like really explaining to them on a simple level in a personal way what the implications of districting means. Great presentation. I loved it, but I have a master's degree. And so many of my patients have third grade level education. So they really need to understand, what does this mean for them? What are the implications from, you know, this means that now you have somebody who can better represent you to get your potholes fixed, you know, like whatever it is, but it has to be a very simple example that they understand. So I just really wanted to make that very, put it out there, because it's really important. And if we want a lot of this area to be involved, we need to make sure we have those.
Thank you. Just to let you know is that, because I don't want you to walk away thinking that has not happened. As a matter of fact, there is a coalition of roughly around 10 community organizations that have been involved in this districting process from the beginning, representing the diversity of Chula Vista, especially within the Latino community. And so they are, as a matter of fact, have been training their constituents to give public testimony. Tonight, what I was going to sum up and say is don't, for those of you who are here tonight, is that, one, I want to thank you very much. Secondly, I don't want you to leave discouraged, thinking that just by this sparse showing, this is the culmination of our efforts. In fact, it's not. Like I said, we're going to have three more workshops coming this week. Tomorrow at the Hub in Otay Ranch. Saturday, we're going to have two workshops. And then there's other avenues, again, for you to submit your testimony. And please, get your friends, your family, your relatives involved. The more people that speak, the better the process will be. So last, before we wrap this up, I just want to ask, since this is a public meeting of the Districting Commission, is there anything that anybody wants to talk about, not necessarily about the public testimony, but anything at all about the districting process, about the Districting Commission, or anything that anybody would like to say? You don't need to fill out a card. You can just stand up and speak, and I'll give you a couple minutes. Anybody? Sure. Okay, well, I thought that this was just general comments. Okay. All right, so then we're walking around.
Is this you? Yes. Hello, Chairman Torres. When I at the map back there was a lot of different spots that was still not filled with population, like for example the supposedly university. That's going to bring a whole lot of people there. How's that, and other new development around the lakes, how's that going to be taken in consideration in drawing this map?
Bonita Vista Middle School, is that we are constrained in that the data that we're relying on is the 2010 census data, which is 5 years old. I actually, in anticipation of this growing concern, I actually downloaded a report by the city of Chula Vista itself. It's called the Growth Report. They do an annual growth report of the increase in households and population. They do that every year, and they also do a projection about a five-year window. And basically, they surmise that since 2010, there's been about an 8,000 increase in our population, citywide. But the point that you're raising is a well-founded point. That's one of the things, as I said last night, that the commission is going to have to grapple with as we develop our districts, because as Ms. McDonald's pointed out, we are limited under case law about the variances between the districts. They cannot be more than 5% between the districts and not more than 10% among all the districts. So luckily we have four districts. One of the challenges, if the commission so chooses, because this is an appointed body, we make the final decisions on the district map. The city council cannot override our decision. We submit a map, a recommended plan to the city council. They can either give a thumbs up or thumbs down. If they give it thumbs down, we have the prerogative of looking at that recommendation, making any adjustments, and then whatever we decide, boom, that's it. That's the map. So it is really up to our discretion. But one of the things that we are going to have to grapple with is that growth. You know, how can we create a districting plan that's viable, not just for the next three election cycles through 2020, but hopefully beyond. So that way the new districting commission in 2021 won't have to start from ground zero all over again. Okay? So it is something we have to be cognizant of. Tino, back there, you're going to have to fill out a card, unfortunately, and speak in the mic.
I wasn't ready, but here we go. Again, my name is Tino Martinez. I represent the Chula Vista Southwest Civic Association. And again, the commission, I don't know how many times you guys have heard this, but good job. Thank you for reaching out to the communities. I've spoken to a couple of you already personally, and thank you for coming out and listening to our thoughts. Right now, Jerome, what I want to bring up is that hypothetical situation at the very end of when this awesome commission hands over the final plan to the city. After all your guys' hard work of hearing and listening and doing, the city, if they do come with a thumbs down, do they come with a thumbs down with a explanation or a suggestion? My reason of asking is because the council is heavily politically influenced. So I really wouldn't, I know it's maybe in the bylaws, I really wouldn't want the council involved at all. You guys have been so transparent that it is something new to Chula Vista. It's awesome. But again, that hypothetical question is just, if that happens, again, will they come with suggestions in your ear or just a thumbs down? Yeah, and then him being here too, is I know he's around too, listening and hearing. But he ultimately represents our city. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, not at all. The process has a lot of safeguards built in to keep city council from influencing this process, as these folks know, and there's express kind of prohibitions on interaction and influence, you know, from the city council. As the legislative body, however, the process is set up as a check and balance, even to this process, for the map that this group comes up with to be presented to them, you know, for their consideration. So that is a necessary part of the process that was built into the charter amendment that was approved. But the commissioner is absolutely right, as another check and balance to kind of limit their impact on the actual map that's drawn. They can't actually modify, you know, the map. They give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. There's nothing in these rules that I'm seeing right now, although I'll take a closer look at it and get back to you if I need to, that prevents them from commenting on why they rejected it or providing input, you know, to this commission. But this commission will ultimately decide if, in fact, it goes to the city council and the maps reject it. So that is, again, there's checks and balances throughout. That's one of the checks and balances on the tail end of the process.
Is there already a time constraint, or just the whole process has to be done by
the whole process needs to be done by certain processes. And as I'm looking at this now, in fact, the city council needs to state the reasons for their rejection back. So as a part of their accountability, they need to explain themselves.
Yeah. I think, Len, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have, after their meeting, when they go over the recommended plan, I think we have to meet within 30 days or something like that to adopt the final plan, you know what I mean? But there's one thing that I want to do say to everybody here, and I should have said it last night, and I will make sure that I say it in the next three meetings, and that is with this commission, I can promise you, as the chairperson of this commission, that the process that we undertake is going to be transparent, has been from the very beginning, and that whatever we do is going to be fair, equitable, and just. And I really want to emphasize those three words. And I think that in the end, it may not be perfect. We may not satisfy everybody, make everybody happy, but it will be fair, equitable, and just. And I can make that promise and stand by it. Okay, with that being said, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight, and I hope to see you again next time around. Okay?